Subcommittee of the Subcommittee with the continuation of the public hearing portion of House Bill 2525, which is the creation of a central hearings panel in the Employment Department. Yesterday there was public testimony given, and I appreciate the kindness of those members who would allow me to be out testifying on behalf of other legislation. We're still short several members, but I assume that there's nothing that would prevent us to go ahead and work this bill in a public session and then work towards a work session during this hour. Do we have any public testimony that's been signed up at this point? Is there any members of the public who would like to testify or make additional input relative to 2525? We have information, and we have with us today Adrian Sexton from the House Fiscal, and Adrian has been kind enough to prepare the potential of the fiscal impact and has given us a fiscal analysis of this proposed legislation. And I would like to give now Adrian an opportunity to go ahead and go through that. You're welcome to come up to the representative and do you let's get you a copy of this?
I believe you have to.
You have a copy of the okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the subcommittee, Representative Shetterly. If I can just outline for you, this is a fairly large document. You might not have seen a five-page fiscal impact statement up to now, but this is a complex bill, as you all know. It affects virtually every state agency, either by including them or by excluding them. The House Bill 2525, as its aim grows and it came to the Ways and Means Committee, and this subcommittee does set out the pilot program for centralized hearing panel. And I really, instead of going into the detail of the impact statement page by page, I want to point out what makes this one different from the ones that you usually see so that you can understand the context of the numbers and the comments that are in the impact statement. Under the comment section, I've identified the areas of the bill by their large sections that have a fiscal impact. So the first major element of the measure is that it does transfer positions from a number of agencies to a hearing officer panel. And in discussions of the structure, I think it's important to remember that the hearing officer panel is going to have its own chief administrator. That person will be employed by, selected by the department, the employment department director, but will be the employer of the, in effect, of the staff that are the positions that are transferred to the hearing officer panel. So think, if you will, of the hearing officer panel as a box within the employment department box for visualizing how some of these numbers are generated and where they go. So the hearing officer panel is going to have an administrative structure with the chief hearing officer, administrative staff, managing individuals who then have a group of hearing officers under them. So the top-down structure with the support staff. And there will be some additional positions that are created or reclassified in order to handle that management structure. Those transferred positions then show up on page 2.
Recall the under the chief hearing officer, those who are sort of in charge of other hearing officers, we call them deputies. What are we calling them?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, I have a post panel hierarchy that I can distribute to you here, and that will give you a sense of those.
Well, one of them gets an executive title, Principal Executive Manager G.
Wow, okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I may, before we get too far into this, for the record, Lane Shatterly, State Representative, District 34. This is kind of like one of those lawyer movies where the critical witness comes running down the center aisle of the courtroom just as the witness, just as the case is going to the jury or something. But we have some late breaking developments in the hall that I want at least to apprise the committee and staff of that will affect, I think, what you do today. But our positive developments, if you recall yesterday, there was some issue about the Construction Contractors Board and Landscape Contractors Board and their role in the panel. And through discussions that have taken place since then and up until 2 minutes ago out in the hall, I want to represent to the committee what I understand to be a resolution that will affect the fiscal impact and will require an amendment to the bill. And that would be, this is an agreement that is, as I understand, been signed on, it's been agreed to by the governor's office and by representatives for the agency and for the building industries trade, and certainly has my support, that it would delay the implementation of the bill with respect to consumer-type claims that are adjudicated by CCB and, I assume, Landscape Contractors Board, too, although I think the volume of those is very small, until a date, and I can't give you that date. It may be in somebody's mind behind me, but it would be until next, sometime during the next legislative session, so that those third-party type claims where the agency is actually adjudicating a dispute between a typically a consumer and a contractor would remain with the agency, with CCB and Landscape Contractors Board, and would not be moved into the panel. What would be moved into the panel immediately would be administrative enforcement proceedings by CCB and Landscape Contractors Board, where they more are undertaking more typical agency-type enforcement actions against the regulated constituency.
That's what they call their disciplinary cases.
Their disciplinary cases, that's right. So as I understand, and I hope somebody will either shake their head behind me or indicate that I'm representing this to you correctly, that the disciplinary-type cases will be moved into the bill or into the panel, effective same date as everybody else, but that the types of proceedings that adjudicate claims between third parties that are not agency proceedings will be delayed until a date certain in, what would that be, 2001. And as I understand, based on our conversations before, that will mean that the CCB hearing officers will not need to be enrolled into the panel. They will remain with the agency until that effective date, because I think it's 20% or less of the agency cases that are actually the disciplinary cases, and it's my understanding from our earlier discussions about this that those would be absorbed by the panel and would not require the shift of positions into the agency, and I hope somebody is affirming that behind me.
I think they've all left the room now. Senator Crow has a comment.
Why will it be any easier to absorb them then than now?
Are you talking financially or otherwise? Fiscally or otherwise?
Fiscally and otherwise. Both. Why do we need to delay it? That's why I guess I want to know.
Well, I think as I mentioned yesterday, the type of proceedings that CCB conducts where it is adjudicating claims between two different parties have always been a little bit odd. I mean, those are different than the other agency proceedings. And so
that's the exempt.
Well, I guess let me say that this was an agreement reached this morning between the governor's office and CCB and the building trades, and I think it comes under the rubric of compromise.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out whether it makes sense or not, because if you need to compromise now and you're just delaying, when you finally get through the delay, you still got the same problem, unless I can figure out how you're solving it.
What I can tell you is that the agency and the constituency that the agency serves or regulates are satisfied with this arrangement. I think for them, it gives them an opportunity to observe the operation of the panel to make sure that for those types of proceedings, it can be a proper forum, and if there are problems observed in the conduct of the panel for those types of proceedings, prospectively, would give an opportunity in the next legislative session to either implement a full exception or proceed. And I'm sorry, Senator, not having been involved in the discussions with the governor's office this morning, I am guessing that that is it, but I think the bottom line is that we have here a true compromise that the agency, the regulated groups and the governor's office are satisfied with, and since it serves the purpose of the bill in that it takes care of a concern that a substantial group had about it, I'm all for it.
I don't think it does anything but delay, but maybe in the process of delaying a decision, a more definitive decision can be made.
And again, I think the concern is that these are atypical proceedings. These are not your garden variety agency enforcement proceedings. And I think that the time to give the panel to implement its work and establish itself, my expectation is will fully satisfy CCB and its constituency that there's no reason not to go there.
Will it be a, and let me just ask the representative as well as Fiscal, the impact that's reflected on page 2 of the fiscal impact statement, showing the Construction Contractors Board total of 6 FTE at $154,985. What's going to be the effect then relative to, does that include all of the hearings cases, including the 20% of the, of those disciplinary cases as well?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The $154,985 figure is the amount that the Construction Contractors Board would be paying to the Employment Department hearing panel for overhead expenditures of the panel, the administrative function of that staffing arrangement. The Employment Department might want to have them respond on the basis of what Representative Shetterly has indicated. It's my understanding, Representative Shetterly, that you're looking then at transferring 4 FTE of Construction Contractors Board and retaining 2 at the board?
I think they're retaining all of them.
All of them?
Yeah. But again, this is, and I apologize for this, but it's a late breaking, and I just got the details that I was able to relay to you just as I walked into the hearing. So.
Mr. Chair, the removal of those 6 FTE and the staff funding and the overhead allocation funding, which is envisioned by the bill as it stands, would create a shift in expenditure requirements to the remaining agencies, including the Employment Department, Adult and Family Services, the Workers' Compensation Insurance Divisions of UC Department of Consumer and Business Services, or the Liquor Control Commission and Motor Vehicles Division of Department of Transportation. Those entities would pick up the overhead that and the personnel costs that would not be transferred then by the Concession Contractors Board.
Would they necessarily pick up the total of the $154,985?
Mr. Chair, yes, they would, because that is part of that staffing infrastructure for a unit that, as you see by the central hearing panel hierarchy with the remaining 130-some-odd staff, that staff is going to be there. Whether you have those 6 individuals or not, there will be infrastructure, the personnel services, the share of the director's office, the budget staff, information systems, all of that administrative operation. If, as an example, if this agency were to lose 6 employees, this agency being the Legislative Assembly, say were to lose 6 employees, you wouldn't have a significant reduction in any of the administrative overhead of the agency. And so those administrative costs would, in the case of the hearing panel, would have to redistribute among the participating agencies, raising their allocation overhead.
Then on page 3, the 79 hearings officers will still be 78.75 full-time equivalency. that wouldn't be reduced by any as a result of the construction contractors board being excluding themselves from the program of the central hearings panel?
Mr. Chair, yes, that would reduce by the number of hearings officers and the administrative support staff that is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services position transfer.
Mr. Chair,
I represent Sheriff.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think that was tracking with the same question and the same comment that you had there. Seems to me, and again, this is going to have to be reworked, and I both apologize for it, but I'm also grateful for it. We've been trying to get this break for the last 2 years, but I think there are some consideration too should be given to the fact that you are going to be moving over fewer hearing officers. You'll be moving over and should be requiring fewer administrative support positions, as well as reducing the caseload. And it seems to me that might have an impact on the staffing level that would be required to maintain the panel as well.
As far as the outside boards, there's like 40 some odd thousand construction contractors in the state, and so that would have to be one of the larger caseloads, I would think, statewide, my recollection. So, do we want to? Now we have some other conceptual amendments that have been passed out, copied and passed out, and we probably could. We can go ahead and carry over. And give Adrian an opportunity, Ms. Sexton, an opportunity to go ahead and rework the fiscal issue, and get that to rework for tomorrow. But I'm wondering if we want to go ahead and spend some time on the two conceptual amendments which have been provided to us by our co-chairs at this particular time. Are you familiar with those two?
Here's one, the emergency clause, and the other,
higher ed. Higher ed, yes.
I'm aware of
that. Would you like to go ahead and explain those two, please, Representative Sheridan?
Well, thank you. As best I can, Mr. Chair, the emergency clause is necessary because of the bill that we passed this session that provides that new legislation that will become effective January 1 of each year succeeding the legislative session. In this case, it will be necessary to hire the chief hearing officer and get the panel up and running before the effective date, January 1. That is, some of it is going to have to happen before the transfer occurs, so the rules are in place and the administration is in place. That would have happened under the normal course if the shutdown on June 18 or some date like that, then we would have been looking at an October effective date, September effective date, and that would have given the panel time to get up and running. With the bill that we passed this session, delaying the effective date of all bills until January 1, it's necessary to attach an emergency clause to this bill to make it possible for the panel to get up and running for the startup. The other bill, the other amendment, which I have seen and the proponents have no objection to, addresses the Department of Higher Education, the university system, and it relates to an exemption for intra-campus hearings, basically student conduct and on-campus personnel issues that would be exempted from the panel. And again, that's a particular type of hearing that we're not overly covetous of to try and capture, and have no objection to the amendment.
That would be under Section 9.
That's right.
Subparagraph 2, subparagraph W would be added to the Department of Higher Education for classification hearings related to as regarding a party who is currently employed, enrolled, or otherwise receiving benefits in the department, or related to a matter which arose at the time the party was employed, enrolled, or otherwise receiving benefits from the department.
Sure. I'm wondering if the amendment really clearly specifies well enough the intra-institutional nature of what they're asking for. I thought that higher ed would be the university system. This is higher ed, but the university system would, the centralized system would be under the individual institutions would not, for certain kinds of student-related or other-related
so fortunate today to have with us both from the governor's office, Mr. Chip Lassendy, as well as Grant Cairns from the Oregon University System. And I think that between the two of them, they certainly could maybe address those particular issues. Welcome, Mr. Lassendy and Mr. Cairns. It's good to have you here. We're honored to have you in our presence today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The question is the adequacy of the amendment that you're adding to Section 9. It doesn't anywhere specify the intra-institutional nature of it. It just applies to the whole system. It calls it the Department of Higher Ed. I presume that's an error. Should be the university system.
Mr. Chairman Senator Charles, for purposes of the Oregon revised statute, we remain the Department of Higher Education, and that is the right. Yes, the Oregon University System is a business name. Mr. Chairman and Senator Trowe, according to our legal counsel, the former director of our legal services and now general counsel for the University of Oregon, Melinda Greer, who drafted that language, it is sufficient to cover the campuses by virtue of the fact that you say the Department of Higher Education would encompass all of those campuses and their related activities.
What, if anything, then, that higher ed would be doing would be subject to this?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Trowe, it would be any person with which we had a matter which would be subject to the statute. It would be any person who was a contractor, a vendor, someone for whom we were selling services, we are to do that, someone that was a guest or a someone who was on the campus physically, but not in any of those categories. It would be land use matters, real estate, other things that would be subject to the statute if they fell into it. And any other matters which I can't now enumerate, but which would be subject to the statute, that would be excluded as a result of that amendment.
You're comfortable holding
the motion? Mr. Chairman and Senator Trowe, I am. To the best of my knowledge and belief, it provides the bifurcation between those things which are conducted on campus regarding our students and faculty and our unrepresented classified administrative staff and on the campuses versus those things that are not.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yes, Representative Shirley.
He's trying to promote me again. Mr. Chair, what I might suggest, as a chair myself, I hate to do a lot of this on the fly, since it is clear we're going to have to come back tomorrow with the amendment in the LC form for Construction Contractors Board and make sure we do that right. I would be happy to walk down to Mr. Cairns after the meeting today down to LC, and let's get that done in LC form, too, so that everybody's comfortable with that. And Mr. Lassendy, I think, wanted to mention something about the land board.
Yes, you'll see in sections, I think it's 53 through 55, that the state land board is included in that. It was our intention during the work group to not include any elected officials. As you, the members of the committee, all know, the state land board is made up entirely of statewide elected officials. I've proposed some language to represent that generally and tentatively agreed to that would change that around. Essentially, the state land board could use this process if they wanted to, but would have the option of overriding it. So it's not quite exempting them from the bill, but it certainly gives them an option how to state that position.
And so there would be language in Section 54 which would be modified. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct, Mr. Chair.
So we can have that in LC form tomorrow, too.
Correct. Okay.
What I wanted to do today was to make sure that all of the members understood that there were additional modifications being made as this particular issue resolved before us. And so relative to Section 54, there will be a modification. We will add, we will discuss the addition of Section 205, which gives us the emergency clause, and then I believe it's Section 9, dealing with that exclusion from the higher education, the Department of Higher Education. So Section 9 would also have an amendment then.
We're still in discussions, Mr. Chair, as well, involving the construction contractors board exactly how that's going to be configured. Part of them is going to be in the bill.
Okay.
Part of them, the concept, at least right now, is that the bill will catch up with them in a couple of years in the middle of the next legislative session after there's some track record for this. The fiscal for that is a little bit in doubt. We've been kicking around some numbers out in the hallway, and I think we need to get some concrete numbers and figure out how those costs are going to be covered for the employment department, or these other agencies don't have to share that burden. We need to get some concrete numbers on that, and I think we can have that by tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yes, we do have, what we would do is we would carry this over for tomorrow, and we do have another hearing tomorrow already scheduled, and what we would do is we would just go ahead and plan to carry it over for the first thing tomorrow, both the hearing and the public hearing and the work session, so that we could have that opportunity to carry it over without additional notice. Are there any other issues then dealing with the bill that we'll be conceptually discussing tomorrow? Any difficulties amongst the members with those conceptual items? And we will gather approval from our leadership to make sure that we can work those conceptual items in and have those added. Thank you very much.
I appreciate your indulgence.
We do have Representative Traeger here, and Representative Traeger, did you wish to testify, or?
Yes.
Would you please come forward? You bet. Welcome, Representative Traeger.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Kurt Traeger, representing House District 23. Appreciate the opportunity to testify. I'd like to do so maybe in two capacities, and just to round out the nature of your discussion a little bit, I think it's important. One is a veterinarian. I'm one of those people that would be sort of regulated by the Center Hearings Panel, as I understand on page 4 of the fiscal handout that you've got, and have some concerns. It's part of being in this process, it, much like you on some of the Ways and Means Committee. There are lots of centralized services that get have fiscal impact on these boards and on these people paying these fees. And on a macro level, when you're talking the Employment Department or Department of Transportation, those assessments are probably fairly derived at. But we have found that at the local board level, that the methodology often used can be a huge impact on the cost to those boards. I think the information systems is a good example where network administrators are assessed, or the boards are assessed a certain amount for the network administration, and it far exceeds the actual use. And unfortunately, these are citizens that are paying these fees, businessmen or sometimes public servants in these health-related capacities that have to pay these high fees. And I point to the second to last paragraph on this page 4, that it says the individual impact on agencies that are required to use the hearings panel is indeterminate at this time. There's some 40 plus boards, you know, that we have expenditure limitation responsibility for here. This could be quite extraordinary. It could be quite high. I'm very worried, and I've talked with LFO at length trying to come down to quantify this since the beginning of the session almost, and we have not been able to do so. So I'm very concerned that the small guy, the small individual, the small board will be hugely impacted on this. I guess I put my pitch in like the contractors board that maybe the veterinary board should be excluded from this for a period of time, maybe until 2001 when this is rounded out. But that might be a little disingenuous. I won't go quite down that route. But I think there's a policy question here. You know, should the small boards be included, or if this is truly a pilot, should we be dealing with the agencies? If you want to go down this road, should we be dealing with the agencies first, where we can quantify things at least a little bit? Put on my other hat. That's as a member of Ways and Means, a member of this body, some concerns about the costs. I mean, there is a huge cost here, a huge administrative cost. And it may be that the public policy question bears that necessity out. I know the good representative from Polk County has worked very hard on trying to worked this out. I think the governor's office has worked very hard trying to come to some agreement. But on committees I served on with the Employment Division budget, there's no savings here. There's added costs. You guys have seen that. We have the transportation budget before us in another one of the committees. The $938,000 stays with the Department of Transportation, plus there's added administration on top of that for the Employment Division. Significant. And does any of the administrative costs that the Transportation Department now uses to help administer their hearings program transfer to the Employment Department? The answer is no. So I think there's some problems here. I think if you look on page 3 of your document, the paragraph just below the big box here basically says, in addition to each transferring agency, you'll pay the hearings officer panel a share of the administrative overhead of OED. That's the services supplies budget item. That's $4 million. The total here, we've got $20 million showing here. As you all know, there's a lot of other funds as general funds, and I've heard that the estimate at least to start with is about $3 million. My guess will be more than that. And I, you know, we're in a time where we're trying to find every bit of money for every different project. Some of us are interested in education budgets. Is this the time to go for this? From what I heard just a few moments ago, there's some things outstanding that we really need to be working on. And I know we've worked long and hard over the interim on this. And it almost sounds to me like we may want to work long and hard on another interim, try and come up with a reasonable solution that it is financially responsible, I think, for the government here for Oregon. So I have some real concerns from a little guy's standpoint, from a fiscal standpoint. Is this where we need to be going at this point in time? And it just seems kind of crazy to me when you roll up the administrative costs and there's no saving out of one division. You have to cost a lot more to do it in a so-called centralized, more efficient manner. So appreciate your letting me comment here.
Thank you very much, one in visiting with our legislative fiscal officer that's with us today, representing legislative fiscal, the direct amount that we've been able to identify at this particular point, assuming no of just general funds and no roll up to any of the other funds, which you've expressed concern about, is a little over $100,000 to get down to, but we don't know this. And that assumes no substantial increase in attorney general fees. This was a concern, and it was a concern that I had expressed, but we hope that we'll be able to resolve that issue and the preparation of cases and so forth. But those are items that perhaps Representative Sheridan could also address.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I do want to respond just briefly. Concern, I think, about the smaller boards and commissions is actually overstated. These are boards and commissions, most of which already contract out their hearings anyway. This bill directs that they will be contracting their hearings to this agency. That's what it does. Unless they are some of the agencies that actually do the commission or the director does their own hearings. And I can tell you that in the work group, consensus was difficult to achieve on many, 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 many issues. But the question of whether it was appropriate for a director of an agency or a commission to be conducting its own hearings as to enforcement proceedings that it had initiated or that the director had initiated, there was clear consensus and broad consensus. It was the easiest thing to achieve, but that was just no longer the way we should be doing business. So for those agencies, that's just the price of doing business the right way. For most of the boards and commissions that contract out, this is just a question of where they're going to be contracting. It's going to be contracting with the panel. And in many cases, I fully expect that the hourly cost to contract with the panel is going to be substantially less than $125 that you might very well see with contracting with private attorneys that might do this. The other thing I wanted to respond to as far as attorney general time, I think that's an unknown quantity. I think it also is overstated. I just would point out we just passed a Senate bill up in the House Judiciary Committee today that actually codifies a practice that will authorize basically expand the ability of agencies to be represented by non-attorney general representatives at agency hearings. And so there will be opportunity in this to reduce that. And I think, too, there's one other unstated element that you're not going to find in the bill, but where you have in the bill a system in place whereby the agencies will no longer be controlling the entire hearings process from start to finish, I think you are going to see a more careful and better use of enforcement proceedings from the very beginning, including alternative dispute resolution before these cases get to hearing. I think that, again, is something that we can't quantify, but I think that where the agencies no longer will have possession and control of the hearings process, I think you may see a different approach to enforcement proceedings among agencies. It will actually have an impact on the cost and the volume of cases going through the panel.
Thank you, Justin Shirley. Let me just express to represent Shirley a scenario that I kind of laid out to legislative fiscal that was of concern to me, but you have allayed that concern, and that is that if we have pick out any board, let's say the veterinary board that is getting ready to proceed with a case, and they have their own hearings officer within their own organization. I don't know that to be the case, that agency has its own hearing officer, and it starts, it develops its case, and then it goes ahead and serves on the case, and then as they see the case begin to evolve and recognize that it's a contested case and a greater level of preparation and greater level of representation on he who is the licensee, then that escalates the other agency, and then each one begins to escalate. And that was a concern that I had early on. But I think that from what I've been told now, that escalation is actually by number one, encouraging a greater use of alternative dispute resolution, and number two, attempting as much as and so far as possible to utilize the non-attorneys at the lower levels to try and finish those cases off. It really needs an agency that, for instance, if we went back to the veterinarians or the construction contractors, any of the construction boards, those kinds of things, those folks would have to have as well prepared case as the period that they were going to need in order to make the presentation. And then as I read some of the language, it still gives you an opportunity that once the case is all heard, then the board still has an opportunity to come back and respond to it if they, number one, felt that there was an injustice done, that somebody didn't understand the case, or that number two, that it wasn't resolved satisfactorily according to the actual rule.
There was a misapplication of the law.
Misapplication of the rule. So I think that kind of allayed the concerns that I had about the escalation of a potential escalation of the cost of the one-upsmanship of my law firm is bigger than your law firm kind of an arrangement and that getting out of hand. And I think that that should be resolved early on.
Just the last comment. As I understand it, then maybe if it pleases the chair and the committee, it might be important in the narrative or at some point if this bill goes forward to indicate that there will be no assessment from the central hearings panel towards all the health boards and other small boards, and that would be done only on a contractual basis, as needed contractual basis. I think that should be made clear given some of the assessments that have come down to the smaller boards, albeit for good reasons. Second, last comment I'd make is that I know you guys are well aware of the fiscal situation here as we hopefully close out our stay in beautiful Salem, and would hope you keep that in mind as you look at these things. I do know the Attorney General's office is asking for $1.6 million here, and about 87 FTE out of the Public Safety Subcommittee. At the cost of about $14 million. Admittedly, a lot of this is other funds, but I would remind you that that's usually 30% general funds, and then whether it's other funds or federal funds, these are taxpaying Oregonians that are paying these fees, assessments, or taxes, and please keep that in mind in your deliberations. I appreciate the good work the committee's done, the good work that Representative Shirley's done.
Thank you very much, Representative Shirley. We appreciate you being here today and the expertise, knowledge, and background that you bring, particularly in light of the fact that you've worked through a number of those health-related licensing boards and other agencies as they relate to this particular issue. And I'm grateful to have your insight and knowledge on that, because you and I have shared comments as we've seen the various boards moving their overall hearing panels and collapsing those hearing panels, or anticipating the collapse of those hearing panels, anticipating the passage of this particular House Bill 2525, and I know that we have shared concerns as to how it would look when it got all done, and I had to ask yesterday that there also be I think it was Mr. Lassenby that said you're moving towards the potential of eventually the administrative law judge approach, and I didn't want to go there just yet. But as you move down this road and move away from just a hearings officer, you know, eventually as it grows and grows and grows, then you know you get a higher level, and we didn't, and I expressed a concern about that, but I think that was.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I may respond, I think it was absolutely intentional in the way this bill was put together that we were not moving in that direction. We, and for one thing, I say that is why it was determined that we would use the title hearing officer. We would not create this aura of an administrative law judge, and that was intentional. We retained the term hearing officer. There is no requirement in the bill that hearing officers be attorneys. That was intentional as well. We are not trying to build a kingdom with this. We are trying to change a process by which the state is currently conducting its contested case hearings. And I would say I do appreciate there's a fiscal impact, and I wish we could do this for free, but I wasn't smart enough to figure out a way to do that. What I would say to that, however, though, is to remind the committee that this has been a path that the legislature has made attempts to go down over the past 20 years. And that this time, and we came close last time with a veto at the end of the session, this time we have the stars aligned, the conjunction is there to make it happen. And again, I understand that it has a fiscal impact, and we always hate to see that. But I tell you, this is an opportunity, and I don't know that if we let this go by that it will be available to us again. And there may be another session 20 years down the road where they're talking about this same thing, and we will not have advanced the cause of fairness and impartiality in the administration of administrative law justice in this state. And to me, that is a high principle and a high priority.
Thank you very much, Representative Shirley. Is there any other further questions, concerns, or comments before we go ahead and carry over the public hearing and work session tomorrow on House Bill 2525? If there are none, we'll go ahead and carry this public hearing and work session over until tomorrow, 2525. Thank you very much.